Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I am so excited for my guest today. I just can't wait to get into it. We're going to talk about chakras, but we're also going to talk about developing mental flexibility, building emotional resilience, and as always, who knows where the conversation's going to go. It's going to go in directions I can't even predict right now, and those are the best kind. First, before we get started, head over to the links in the show notes. You're going to find a lot there. You'll find ways to connect with my amazing guest. You'll find ways to connect with me on social media. You'll find a way to purchase my own book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by three experts from the film The Secret, Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, Michael Beckwith. It was also endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. You will also find ways to sponsor the podcast, to get some free downloads, to sign up for one of my courses. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing amazing things in the personal development sphere. We have events pretty much every month, either virtual or in person, with incredible headliners like Les Brown, Dr. Joe Vitale, Sharon Lecter, Jim Quick, Joseph McClendon, Mary Morrissey, and I've gotten to share the stage with all these people. It's so much fun. There's amazing people that are part of it. So come stay connected. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science. Diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, so with me today, I have Dr. Shay Tubali. And Dr. Shay is an internationally renowned author, speaker, and philosopher with over 21 books published in 13 languages, including the best-selling The Seven Chakra Personality Types. He holds a PhD in philosophy from the University of Leeds, where his research focused on transformative dialogue in ancient Eastern and Western philosophies. Dr. Shay is recognized for his innovative work in the field of personal transformation, particularly through his soul design system, which explores how the interplay of primary, secondary, and supportive chakras shapes our personality and life purpose. His latest book, Your Chakra Personality, provides practical tools for decoding the soul's blueprint. Welcome, Dr. Shay. I'm so glad you're here with me.
Hello, Chris. I'm so delighted to be here with you.
It's such an honor, and I'm so excited to get into all of these concepts. But first, I always start my episodes off the same way, and that is by asking my guest, what is their origin story? So what set you on this path of becoming this philosopher with 21 books published, focusing on chakras and transforming your life?
Yes, that's a very... big question. Well, it all, I think, started with a profound revelation, a profound inner revelation at the age of 23. Before that revelation, I had been a journalist and a novelist with a sort of what I thought was a promising career. But then I had been deeply moved by an incessant spiritual drive to discover who I am and what I am here for, and what is the meaning of life, and what is it all about. So then I devoted myself to tireless search. I was actually, it was a matter of life and death for me. And then at the age of 23, actually at, you can say at the feet of my guru, although it wasn't at the feet of his feet, but it was metaphorically so, during a silent retreat, I just experienced a dissolution of my personal separate self and emerging into the universal I am, the universal or cosmic consciousness. And that resulted in uncontainable bliss, unfathomable love, and ecstasy. So that was so inspiring that I decided at that point to dedicate my life to this realm of consciousness, the potential of human consciousness, the powers of human consciousness, the ability of human consciousness to liberate itself, to be its own grace. So this is how it all started. Then I became a spiritual teacher, teaching at first spontaneously, gradually developing all sorts of methods to bridge the ordinary consciousness and that kind of transcendent experience, transcendent revelation. So I engaged in therapy, spiritual therapy, and met thousands of people and wrote numerous books on this subject. But then 7 years ago, I just felt that this wasn't enough, and that there was something that called me in the academic world to investigate consciousness also from the so-called scientific or scholarly perspective. So to look at it also from the outside, not only from within. So that led me to academic research, to complete my PhD in philosophy, specifically in philosophy of mysticism. So this is where I am right now. My work is at the intersection of philosophy, psychology, and mysticism. And this is where it thrives, and this is where I feel most ecstatic.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing all that. I relate to that just hunger for knowledge and that drive to figure out who you are. And your experience at the silent retreat sounds incredible. Have you been able to get back to that place of just pure bliss and ecstasy?
Oh, continuously.
Yeah. Cool.
Continuously. Yeah. That is, I think, the turning point. It was a shift that enabled me to tap into that kind of space over and over again. The barrier was removed at that moment.
What do you think the barrier is for most people that they can't get to that place?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Well, I'd say that the barrier is attachment to attachment to our own story, attachment to our past, attachment to our future, attachment even to our familiar form of suffering. We just we attach ourselves to that which is known to us, and for this reason we remain at this level of clinging to our familiar self and familiar thoughts and emotions. To be able to access that kind of transcendence, we have to be willing at least temporarily to leave everything behind and to glimpse into the eternal now.
I appreciate that answer. So if people are listening and they're like, I guess the question is like, how do you navigate between like living in the world, like the material world, and practicing non-attachment, right? Because there's like Eckhart Tolle talks about it a lot. Like you can be like doing or being, and like too much of either one, you're like, there's got to be like a balance, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. I would say that that if we begin to understand that being is the ground on which we stand and the ground from which our doing flourishes, then that makes perfect sense, you see. And that is actually also how the universe works, because the universe is held or contained by this kind of infinite beingness, infinite space. And that means that space is that which enables everything to unfold, everything to take place. Space, the being, is the container, is that which enables life to come into being constantly. So when we understand that, we begin to approach our meditation differently, you see, because sometimes we think of meditation as the place where we escape, the place where we rest or find relief from life's burdens. But really, meditation is the ground, is the starting point, is the way we prepare the ground of our being for a non-attached kind of doing, for doing that is total and yet doesn't cling to consequences, doesn't desperately hold on to results. So we don't find our happiness, our joy in our actions, but in our being. And from that kind of fullness of inner joy, we act.
Yeah, thank you for that. Is it kind of like acceptance for whatever is going on in the present also, or is that totally off track?
Acceptance in the sense, we need to always ask ourselves, where can acceptance come from, you see, because how can I accept things? I accept things only when I am able to experience fullness within me that enables me to be, well, pretty okay with everything that happens, because I don't desperately need life to be this or that. I don't need pleasure to last, and I don't need pain to be over so quickly. I don't resent, because I have that kind of inner fullness or wholeness that I can rely on. And this is, by the way, because you mentioned before the chakras, a part of the fundamental learning of chakras is how to shift from a dependent state, a state in which I depend on the world, I depend on gratification, I depend on conditions in the world to be happy, to feel full, to feel joyful and stable and powerful. But when I balance my chakras, I finally develop a sort of inner stability, inner joy, inner power, and inner love. So I become my own source of all those feelings that I've been looking for in the outside world.
So when you're feeling, when someone is feeling dependent on the outside world, or is overly attached to their story or their past or the future, is that a sign that their chakras are out of balance? And then follow-up question, what's the process of balancing your chakras? Is it letting go of all those things and you have to do that to balance them? Or can you balance your chakras and everything else kind of falls into place? I know I just threw a lot at you.
Yeah. No, these are wonderful questions, actually. Well, so is that an indication that our chakras are unbalanced? Yes, of course. We always need to be like investigators. I call this a chakra detective. And when you are a chakra detective and you have a sufficient knowledge of chakras, you are also able to trace a certain kind of imbalance back to its original chakra or origin chakra. You see, because each kind of balance, there are nuances. Each kind of balance corresponds to a certain chakra, because each chakra contains different themes, different challenges, different blockages, and also different keys to balancing. So when I begin to think, well, why do I feel so dependent? Why am I so attached to my story? And what type of story or what part of my story am I particularly attached to? For instance, perhaps I'm especially attached to personal relationships and to my story of betrayal, to my story of feeling left behind by certain people. So that is related to an imbalance in my heart chakra. And then that is where I need to resolve my kind of dependency. So that's just one example. So how do I balance the chakras? Well, that's a very, of course, a comprehensive question to which I've devoted decades of writing and teaching. But to say something meaningful about it, well, sometimes I think that there is a sort of a New Age belief that we only need to work energetically on our chakras to fix them energetically, and that should resolve everything. So that's why when you Google chakra healing or chakra balancing, or you search on YouTube, you find all those videos promising you, if you listen to this musical piece, that should balance your heart chakra, or something like that. Or here, this is how you open your crown chakra. This is, of course, a little silly. And it actually, perhaps it enables us to experience some kind of temporary sense of balancing in a particular chakra. But to really balance a chakra, we need to understand its emotional themes, its life lessons, and we need to respond to these themes in ways that are constructive in real life, in moments of truth. And we also need to go through some forms of therapy that is directly related to these themes. Because you see, it's all about learning how to learn how to effectively suppress certain emotions in order to function, but actually to reach a state in which I no longer have these emotions, which means that I experience a sense of quietude, a sense of peace in my chakra. And when I'm facing certain life challenges, I'm no longer triggered by them in the same way. I don't experience this kind of inner turmoil. So this is a very important thing to understand. So chakra work requires energetic work, for sure, and meditative work, but also therapeutic work, emotional maturation, and ultimately a spiritual development that is aligned with this particular chakra. So that's why it's a whole science that for me is, of course, thrilling. It's not work. It's life. It's what life is all about.
yeah, totally. And I, the way you describe it, I'm sure pretty much everyone has some work to do, right, in balancing a chakra. So you mentioned, right, suppressing certain emotions or no longer having those emotions. Can you talk a little bit more of that? Because so much of what I've studied talks about when we suppress emotions and don't allow ourselves to feel them, they can show up as like disease in the body. So I guess, what emotions are you referring to? And like, what do you mean by that?
What kind of emotions I'm referring to when we speak of not suppressing, right?
Well, did you? Oh, maybe I misunderstood. I thought you said suppressing the emotion so you no longer have it.
Yes, well, we do suppress emotions because we simply don't handle them, and we try to simply function while having them, just disguising our true reality. So, yes.
I was going to say, maybe I misunderstood. Maybe you were saying that we are, a lot of us are suppressing emotions and we need to not suppress them. Is that what you were saying?
Oh, yes, completely.
Okay,
completely. We need to agree to actually be very attentive. And what I love about chakras is that they never allow us this kind of intellectual or analytical bypass that most of us choose to take, you see, because we don't want to feel. And chakras are a highly somatic tool. They require us to actually listen to the reality of our emotions being very attentive, by paying attention to the reality of our body. Chakras, they are exactly at the intersection of our physical, energetic, emotional, mental, and spiritual realms. And so they mediate all these realms, and if we learn to listen to our body, that also means that we learn to listen to our emotions, our thoughts, our energy, and our soul. So that is why it's very important to notice if I have, for instance, suffocation in the throat, which implies a throat chakra imbalance, then I'm sensitively listening to my chakra. I'm closing my eyes and I'm asking the throat to tell me, what is it that I'm blocking? What is it that I'm not giving voice to? So that is how chakras encourage us to develop profound sensitivity to our physical reality. And this and our body never lies, you see? Our thinking lies, our thinking deceives, our thinking analyzes and also rationalizes certain conditions, but not our body. And when we refuse to listen to the truth of our body and to the truth of our emotions, then it eventually transforms into psychosomatic disorders that are harder to resolve.
Yeah, it's almost like the symptoms are just telling you that the chakras are misaligned, right? Or something's not aligned energetically and spiritually and physically. So what kind of, when you say therapy is one of the things they need, do you mean like literal, like talk therapy or like somatic exercises, or does it just differ?
Oh, well, any kind of therapy actually can start the process, but I always prefer, and that's why I've devoted, again, decades of my life to developing specific methods, therapeutic methods that enable this kind of energy transformation and spiritual transformation, which means that we not only work therapeutically, but we work in order to transform our being and to attain inner wholeness, you see, because talk therapy often just focuses on trying to, well, make things better for me. But that leaves me at the same level of where my suffering first developed. So that is actually not a transformative or radical kind of solution. I have to somehow leap to a higher level of cognition, a higher level of consciousness, and from that higher level of consciousness to resolve that kind of emotion in order to be able to ascend to a higher level of consciousness, you see? So it needs, therapy really needs to be inspired, inspiring, transformative, and ultimately, if I may say so, ultimately it should lead to the end of psychology. So a good therapy leads to the end of therapy. Good psychology leads to the end of the psyche as we know it. The psyche is that kind of complete, conflicted, burdened, past-ridden kind of thing. That can end. That can end.
Yeah, I love that. So what you said you've developed specific therapeutic methods. Do you want to tell me a little bit about some of them?
No, gladly, of course. that's what I'm always thrilled about. One of these methods is called the expansion method. And the expansion method is actually my core method. And I developed it years ago when I realized, well, when I was a young spiritual teacher, I naively expected people to just awaken spontaneously and irreversibly, and just by hearing the truth. And then after some time, well, they did experience some kinds of revelation, but never anything irreversible, because they always kept returning to their familiar self. So then I developed the expansion method that enabled people to systematically and repeatedly return to this state, to the state of expanded state of consciousness. So all they need to do is simply focus on a certain object that they want to expand. For example, if I have anger, then I use my inner senses to identify the pattern associated with my anger, the area in the body, the color, the shape, the form, the sensation, and so on and so forth. And when I have this kind of tangible form, I begin to visualize how it becomes bigger and bigger until it reaches its maximum limit and cannot expand anymore. And when that expansion reaches its limit, I find myself spontaneously shifting to a higher state of consciousness. And if I do that repeatedly, I reach states that are actually incredible, and usually only very advanced meditator can experience. So even if I'm a beginner, I find myself after 10 minutes experiencing infinite light, or complete freedom, or the highest sense of self, or the universal consciousness, all that. But here's the thing. When people reach that state, it's not over. You mentioned before this kind of tension between being and doing, right? So we have to somehow bring that light, this inner light, into the world and into our ordinary self. So what we do then is that from that state of consciousness, there are very detailed processes guiding people to return to their traumas, to their deep-seated emotions, to their most difficult emotional patterns, and to unravel all these emotions and memories from that state. The beautiful thing is that when you experience that you are infinite light, or that you are one with the universe, and you are told now return to your most dreadful trauma to bring your newfound presence into it, you say, okay, I'm able to do it, because now you are bigger than your trauma. You are bigger than your memory. You are so wide that you can contain something that previously seemed too big to handle. So that is the beautiful thing about, we can call that enlightened therapy, because you treat your wounds from a state of bliss.
Wow. That's amazing. I want to try it. Like, I really want to try it. And so how do you teach this? Do you like work with people one-on-one, or do you have workshops? Like, how do you facilitate?
Well, there are, for me, there are two forms in which I work, first of all, there is a professional training, which means that I teach coaches, therapists, psychologists, and doctors. I teach these methods to these people. This particular method was also medically researched, so it's been validated to a certain extent. And so there is training and there are seminars. And during the seminars, people also always sit in couples, also online, and work together with these techniques to unravel each other's traumas and deep-seated patterns, and that is actually a remarkable kind of work. It's always we are saturated with bliss and in an ocean of ecstasy together. But then there's of course the one there's the one-on-one work that I no longer do, but I have trained hundreds of people to do. So they meet people in their clinics and help them to reach these states.
Wow. Okay. So I think I need to find a seminar. That's really cool. Yeah. And like when you were saying, like an ocean of bliss, like when people are around you in a heightened state, like you pick up on that energy field. So I can't even imagine, like, if everyone's like, consciously going to that place, the energy in that room must be just incredible.
That's what I love the most. You see, because when people sit in a room, many of them, and begin the process of expansion. Now, most of the people are in an ordinary state of consciousness at the beginning of the process. So you feel that the room is dense and that it is, well, it is the material, the familiar material world. But then after something like 10, 20 minutes, something becomes different. It's like it's the very same room with containing physical bodies and ordinary selves, but all of a sudden it's an energy field that is so alive, that is so palpable, something that effortlessly transports you into a state of bliss. And that is where I love so much to walk around and to feel that kind of energy field, and to always marvel at how much this bliss is right under our nose. You see, because it's not so far away. If in just 10 minutes people can reach that state, that means that it's that state of consciousness is just one thought away. It's always just one thought away. That is the distance. It's not like that we need to travel through our psyche to resolve everything, to reach some kind of state of imaginary perfection, and only then will we be allowed to finally experience that kind of bliss. It's always here, it's always available, and because this is our truest self, and it's actually nearer than our body, you see? It is who we are. So all we need to do is that kind is to pay attention and to have the right tool for that.
I love that. It's only one thought away, because our thoughts are so powerful, right? Our thoughts create our reality. So your new book is all your chakra personality. I have it right here, is all about decoding your chakra personality. So, I asked you before in the green room if you wanted to help me decode my chakra personality live on air. And you said it's a really big process, but we can do a little bit. So do you want to walk me through a little bit, and then just to give listeners like a little bit of a taste?
Yes. And just to give a very brief explanation, the chakra personality type is of course not the universal chakra system that we all contain within our subtle body, but it is the particular chakras that are stronger within our personal system, defining our soul's purpose, meaning, and essence. So each one of us has some chakras that are stronger than others, and this is for a good reason. It's because they are key to discovering our essence as a soul, our soul's journey, our true passions, and how we are ideally meant to fulfill ourselves in the world. So that is just an explanation. So, well, I will ask you this. First of all, but can we go a little bit personal?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Not too personal, don't worry. So how would you define your happiest moments in life? Each one of us has those moments that feel the happiest, most fulfilling.
How would I describe them? Like the emotions that I feel during them?
No, the situations that make you the happiest. What is it? Is it interpersonal relationships? Is it at work when you, I don't know, when you learn something, when you delve into some kind of profound esoteric wisdom? Is it when you feel that you are fulfilling a certain ambition or something that you have tried for a long time to achieve, to reach a mountaintop? What makes you the happiest? Makes you feel the most alive?
It's kind of a tie. I'd say one of them is, when you said your happy place, I immediately went to, I'm a horseback rider, and I spent my summers growing up in the Colorado Rockies, and we would take these all day long horseback rides with like good friends, and we'd just be in nature, and it just felt like so free and light. And it was like, this is where my heart belongs, like that feeling. But then as you were talking, like, I'm also that person that, when I achieve something, totally. Like when I finished my book and I was like in the flow writing, like, I don't think I wrote my book. I think like I downloaded my book, you know, that feeling where you're just in the flow, and I wrote it in like a month. And then I think also just kind of, I mean, this is like such a ego thing, but like also just like being validated for that, like having people like acknowledge wisdom I can impart, or acknowledge when I do a good job at something, which is like such a human ego thing, but if we're being like very, very honest here. So yeah, I don't know if I just screwed up your whole system.
No, not at all. It's very important to understand that we are supposed to have not just a unidimensional experience of happiness and meaning, but it is because we have three chakras that are dominant, one of which is the strongest, and that's what takes some time to discover which one is the essence, the essential chakra, the primary chakra. But it's perfectly fine to have several kinds of happiness. Now I will ask you.
I want to add one more,
of
though.
Course, like, of course.
Just like relaxing days with my husband make me so happy. And we have a 13-month-old son. We just did that this weekend. Like, we didn't have any plans. Like, we walked for a walk. It was gorgeous out. Like, just kind of like hung in the yard, did a little gardening. Just like those perfect days is like what I live for. Like, those are probably like my top.
Okay. That's important. Now, if I asked you a bold question, a wide question, what is for you the meaning of life? Why are we here for? In one sentence, what is this world all about for you?
We are here to have experiences and to learn, grow, and level up so that we keep ascending that ladder back to source. I think we're constantly rising in our level of consciousness. So it's all about learning and growth and having experiences.
Okay. And one last question, because of course we are limited in time.
Yeah.
If I asked you to complete this sentence quite spontaneously, ever since I can remember myself, my experience of myself and the world has been...
My experience of myself. I mean, seeking knowledge is what came right away. Like, I'm just a knowledge seeker. Like you said about yourself, like just that thirst for knowledge and growth, I guess I would say.
I see.
Did I answer that incorrectly?
No, there are no incorrect questions in this. It's impossible, actually.
Okay.
It's a process of discovery. Well, I can say, first of all, I can say what chakras are certainly dominant in you. But of course, I cannot determine right now so readily what kind of chakra type you are, you see. So first of all, it's clear that you have a strong third eye chakra type, because it's there's a lot about perceiving life as a learning experience, as an opportunity for knowledge, for understanding. So that is very central for you. Then there is the solar plexus chakra type that is ambitious, that likes mountaintops, that likes reaching its best self, and becoming the best it can be also in the world, and also winning and overcoming. So that's the second. And then I also find the sacral chakra type in you. And the sacral chakra type loves enjoyment, and loves bodily experiences, embodied experiences, feelings, and flow. That's why the horse riding came first, but also the time with your husband and your child. It's being in this kind of spaciousness and feeling yourself rooted. So these are the three. I can also, of course, there is also a throat chakra type in you, or at least a strong throat chakra type, because you are also an influencer, an educator, someone who likes to guide and to show people the truth. So these are, but I would say the third eye, the solar plexus chakra, which is the third chakra, and the sacral chakra, they seem to me like the somehow the combination.
Amazing. Thank you. I think everything you said, I'm like nodding. I'm like, yeah, you totally pegged me. So now that I have that, I can look in your book and figure out my soul mission and all of that.
Exactly. Cool. Because this enables you, when you begin to understand your constellation, you are able to start navigating your inner system, your gifts, your excesses, your imbalances, your self-fulfillment, your particular type of happiness, and also you are able to resolve some of your major dilemmas and some of your major life questions by simply looking into your constellation. You can find answers there. It's actually extraordinary to realize how much you can glean from these just three numbers, because when you understand what this constellation entails, it's a whole world of discovery. So we only need to align ourselves with that kind of constellation to finally feel that we're at home within ourselves and within the world.
Very cool. That's really exciting. So if someone, is someone more likely to suffer from physical ailments connected to chakras that aren't their top strong ones?
Well, certain ailments, they can be related to two things. One is a particular untreated emotional pattern, or any kind of deep-seated memory that resides untreated within a particular chakra. So this is the first thing, and that can be is not necessarily related to one's chakra personality type. It can be simply a part of our general process of chakra balancing. But it can also be sometimes because we have this kind of tendency to overflow as our chakra type. You see, so a third eye chakra type, when they're very strongly third eye chakra type, they have this tendency for mental burnout because they strain their mental world. They try to think so hard that they can have, for instance, migraines, you see, mm-hmm. or they can have all kinds of headache tensions. So that is one. So it can either be related to a particular chakra balancing process, or to an excess that we're experiencing as our chakra type.
Yeah, I'm like, I get headaches, that checks out. That's really interesting. So if we're gonna go about trying to heal ourselves, and maybe the root cause is that old emotional pattern or memory that's stuck in a chakra, how do you go about, I guess, like even figuring that out in the first place and then kind of rooting it out?
That's a fantastic question. Well, when we are able to, first of all, we need to acquire some basic knowledge of the chakras. That's quite essential. But the beautiful thing, but also the challenging thing about chakras is that we can't just intellectualize the chakras away. This means that we need to listen to them. Now, how do we do that? Let me give you a very simple example. For instance, there is a certain situation that I find especially challenging in my life. So what I can do is that I can close my eyes for just 5 minutes and begin to think about this situation, about how why it is challenging to me, what emotions it evokes in me, and to get in touch with what it feels like in my body, in my emotional system, in my mental system when I think about that situation. And then after a few minutes, I can notice that one particular area of the body responds more to that kind of description, to that kind of contemplation. It's as if the chakra that is associated with my issue immediately is triggered and is felt in the most dominant way. So now this is called my conflict chakra, the where my conflict resides. So then I can begin to enter into that area of the body. Perhaps it's in the heart area. Perhaps it's in my solar plexus. Perhaps it's in my lower abdomen. Perhaps I feel it in my knees and I feel it in my legs, or perhaps I feel it in my forehead. So I enter into that region and I begin to feel it energetically and try to understand the energetic message, and to slowly translate it into emotional language, into recognizable language that explains to me what the problem is and how I should resolve it. So now, of course, I have very detailed practices related to this. This is called becoming a chakra whisperer, because it's all about learning how to experience a challenge and immediately close our eyes, listen to the chakras, and identify what challenge I am truly facing and how to respond to it. So this is how we become masters of our own life, because we are able to understand the origins of our conflicts and their key solutions.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to start using that exercise. I think you know, that's such a gold nugget for listeners. So I want to shift a little bit. One of the things I was originally like told that you work on, and I know we only have like 10 minutes left, really developing mental flexibility, building emotional resilience, and using transformative dialogue to transform your life and career. And I'd love to just talk a little bit about those. Maybe I'll just kind of hand it over to you. Like, what do you think are the most important messages within that realm that you want to get out to listeners today?
About mental flexibility.
Yeah, or emotional resilience and transformative dialogue, like all of those. I just want to hit on that a little bit before we end.
Yes, well, the way I work in the field of mental flexibility is by saying this very simple thing. We are a lot of our sense of a lack of resilience, or the feeling that we're coming up against life's walls, so to speak, and we're feeling that we are incapable of coping with certain challenges is because of mental rigidity. So when I work in the field of mental flexibility, I actually draw attention to the very opposite: mental rigidity. What is mental rigidity? It is when I begin to become so reactive, so attached to my predetermined, ready-made answers and solutions, that I keep returning to those solutions, to those reactions, and instead of listening to what I'm truly facing. And that's why when I face a certain challenge, I need, first of all, to delay my response, delay my reaction, because in that reaction lies the past. You see, it's a certain strategy, unfortunately, mostly a failed strategy that I keep repeating. So instead of doing that, I simply pause. I begin to observe my reaction. And I begin to listen to what it is that I'm truly facing. Now, this is, by the way, even in conversations, because you mentioned transformative dialogue. For instance, if you say something to me, and I already, while you're talking, I already have an answer formulating within my mind, that is an indication that I'm trapped in mental rigidity, because I already know what my response is going to be. You see, so mental flexibility is a kind of state in which my ability to listen and to delay the instant gratification of reaction, all that enables me to begin to accommodate, to create space for new situations, for new experiences, and also a new information coming to me. Because imagine those who are mentally rigid, when they receive a new piece of information, they immediately know, or they say, yes, I already know that. You cannot surprise me with anything. You cannot rock my world. You cannot change my mind. And that is exactly the point. When there is listening, I'm able to change my mind, to enjoy changing my mind. And as a result, I also maintain the youthfulness of my mind, because minds age when they grow rigid, and minds grow younger with time if they are able to keep that kind of openness and unbiased, non-reactive listening.
I appreciate that so much. And I think about, I just think about myself, like going, I guest on a lot of podcasts too. And, you know, we kind of have these certain stories that we tell every time, certain teaching stories or certain responses to things. But I appreciate this because I'm going to challenge myself to try to not stay on that script. And it's not a script on purpose. It's just because, you know, you talk about it so much that it just becomes second nature, like flies off. But you know, just thinking about like how things kind of download, like you can have new information shared and learned when you're not focusing on that. So yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, that's so beautiful what you're saying right now. And thank you for engaging so deeply with this message. Well, you know that my experience in podcasts is actually very interesting because very often I'm completely surprised by very unexpected questions. And I enjoy it so greatly because I really don't know what's going to happen. And then I listen to the question and the first thought is how I'm rejecting that kind of familiar reaction and creating space for something new, for something that will really come out of that kind of shared space that we've created, and not as an expert just throwing on the listeners whatever it is that I've accumulated. Yeah. Because that's basically old mind is like a cluster. It is so self-contained that it only pours out or emits information, but can hardly let in anything new.
Oh my gosh! You're making me think of Are you in the U.S. by the way? I don't know if you're in the U.S.
Portugal.
You're in Portugal. Oh, cool.
Yes.
Well, in the U.S. right now, it's very politically divided.
Yes.
And you just made me think of like people who kind of stay in their own echo chamber where like they're engaging in media and conversations and everything they watch, everyone they talk to, they surround themselves with people who feel the same way and believe the same things. So it's like just reinforcing that versus getting out and reading something else or having a conversation with someone with a different point of view in an open-minded and loving and compassionate way and letting new information in that way.
That's so important, and that's a major part of my interest in mental flexibility, because I think mental flexibility is the most important trait that we could develop to actually thrive in the world, to cope with disinformation, but also to be an embodiment of peace and true listening in a world that is painfully divided. You see, because democracy, in essence, has always been about conversation, about people able to think together, and we've lost that kind of art of talking to each other. And instead, we're just, everyone is entrenched in their opinions. Now, opinion is actually, I'm sorry to say, from the perspective of a flexible mind, opinion is a very mediocre state to be. Actually, the true intelligence is when I don't form crystallized opinions, but I listen moment to moment to situations and I really learn to appreciate their complexity, seeing them from different angles, appreciating the different voices in order to reach a sort of truly constructive solution and not just spitting out what I think, which is always what I've already thought before and that is never changing and that is always the same automatic reaction to whatever piece of information I might encounter. And this is what is happening nowadays. And we've lost that space of listening. And that is actually dangerous It is not just something wonderful to cultivate for ourselves, but it is also something that we should cultivate for a truly better world.
Yeah, so well said, beautifully said. I want to respect your time, so I feel like I could talk to you for so long. There's so much. I feel like we just kind of skimmed the surface, but I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on today. I'm sure people want to know, you know, where they can connect with you, book a seminar, find your books, all the things. So if you want to take a moment and share.
Gladly. Yes, of course. Well, first of all, I have my official website, which is shytobali.com. I'm sure it will appear below our conversation, so there's no need to be more accurate than that. And then there is this official website contains all my upcoming events, the different books. The books themselves are everywhere because these are worldwide publishers. And I would like to invite people to two things. One is my YouTube channel, which is under my name, and contains over 800 videos. So that is a very broad range of videos, including explanations about how to integrate spirituality into our daily life, guided meditations, and chakra knowledge. But there's also on my official website, on the main page, there is an invitation to a free 7-day challenge. Now, this 7-day challenge contains 7 processes of expansion, just as we described before, this kind of expansion that leads people to a heightened state of consciousness. So that is completely free. Simply enter the main page and enjoy the process.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And again, all of that will be in the show notes, the link. So if you're driving and don't even worry about it, it's down there. Thank you again so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you and learn from you today. If you are listening, please like, comment, share, subscribe, send this to someone you think would find it useful. Go check out Dr. Shai's website and YouTube, and let's all help raise the consciousness of humanity. Thank you all. Have a beautiful rest of your day.